16 and verse 7. But the Lord said unto Samuel, look not on his countenance, or on the height of his stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord seeth not as a man seeth. For man looketh on the outward appearance, but the Lord looketh on the heart.
Well, good evening, everyone. Good to see each and every one of you. We're thankful for the opportunity we have to be with one another, to worship God in spirit and in truth. Is this our first time with Sadie Cooper? Yes. How honored we are that Cooper is in our presence. That's always something Sarah and I have always struggled with a newborn, is when to bring him out, but that first time is very special. So certainly go and give Cooper some love if parents are okay. So we've been going through 1 Samuel on the Sunday evening, and certainly there are many lessons more that we could take from the book. There's just so much. Each chapter could have its own lesson. But we are kind of wrapping up September, and we're going to be moving into October. October, I'm going to go back to the New Testament. So before, we were at 1 Thessalonians. So for October, I'm planning on going through 2 Thessalonians. So just kind of jumping back and forth between the old and the new. But certainly we're wrapping up 1 Samuel. And as we see in our reading that we're thankful that was read for us there in 1 Samuel chapter 16, is we have a moving on from King Saul. And King Saul, as we see in the chapter before, because of some of his mistakes and him not following God the way that he should, God says, I'm going to move on from King Saul. The kingship, the king lineage is not going to go on with Saul anymore. It's going to be shifted. And it's going to be shifted to David. And Samuel is really grieved about this. He's kind of been semi-close to Saul throughout this process, and I think he's kind of disturbed by everything that's gone on. But Samuel is the one that's going to go find, basically, and anoint the next king, directed by God. And he shows up to Jesse's house, and basically we have this process of him going through all of Jesse's sons. And he brings out the first one. And God goes, no, not that one. And he brings out the next one. And he's going, no, not that one. And we kind of have, leading into it, the situation of basically going through Jesse's sons. We have that verse there in 1 Samuel chapter 16, verse 7. It says, but the Lord said to Samuel, do not look on his appearance or on the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For the Lord sees not as a man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart. You know, I kind of just took that a little bit, and I just started to run with it. What did God see on that day that man does not see? What did God see in David? He goes through all the brothers. I mean, he's going to go through all the brothers. He comes to this household, he goes through all the brothers, works his way down through, and it's almost like David is forgotten. They're like, well, do you have any more sons? He kind of ends the list, and he sees all the sons there, and he's like, hey, I'm through all the sons. Is there anybody else? And, well, there is David. There remains my youngest, but behold, he is keeping the sheep. And Samuel said, send and get him. It's almost like David's left out the whole situation. You know, what did the Lord see in David that many times we don't look at and we don't focus upon? See, Samuel was looking at these sons. He's like, well, this guy is a handsome young man, or this guy looks like he has a very good, strong physical stature. He's looking at the outward, and just again and again and again, God says, no, that's not what I'm looking for. What was God looking for? What did God see that day in David? And I think that really it's the same thing he sees in us. The same thing he sees in us. We have this transition point where we're really kind of transitioning from Saul to David. Certainly Saul is going to serve for a while longer, but David is going to be that next in line. And, you know, as I contemplated this lesson, I started to think about it and thought about it more and more, how intimidating it is that God sees things that we don't see. It's kind of intimidating. At least I perceive it to be that way. Wait, God is seeing some things that I'm not seeing? What is he seeing that I'm not seeing? And some of those things we'll never see. some things that God sees, he sees before we do, before we even acknowledge it as part of ourselves. But that's pretty intimidating when you think about it. What is God seeing in David that Samuel can't pick up on, that his dad is almost not picking up on, that his brothers are not picking up on? What is he picking up on? And I think the Bible gives us a little hint, but I just thought of three things that God commonly sees in us that a lot of times we don't see in ourselves, and sometimes other people don't see in us either. You know, the Bible talks about this idea of God seeing things that we don't always see. In Proverbs chapter 15, verse 3, it says, "The eyes of the Lord are in every place, keeping watch on evil and good." It's intimidating. God can see everything. He knows everything. In Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 13, it says, "No creature is hidden from his sight, but all are naked and exposed to the eyes of him whom we must give an account." What are things that the Lord sees that we can't see? Number one is exactly what the Bible verse says is the heart. Is that day, what Samuel couldn't see, perhaps what dad couldn't see, perhaps what the brothers couldn't see, is that God could see the heart. The Lord really can see the heart. A lot of times when we go throughout life, we think we're doing right, but that idea of seeing the heart or seeing the mind almost goes into the idea of our motives and what drives us. And somehow, God can see David's heart. You know, the Lord is looking for leaders whose hearts are in tune with his own. He's looking for leaders that will know God's will and will obey it. And as on this day, he can see what they can't. He can see the heart of a young shepherd boy, the keeper of the sheep. He can see his heart. No, we're not talking about the blood pump. That's not what we're talking about. But we're talking about the heart. We're kind of talking about our mind. We're moving from the physical to the spiritual, this idea of our heart, our mind. God can see that, and he can see it at all times. And what's hard is that when we go throughout our lives, we realize the preacher can't see our heart. The elders can't see our heart. Really, you realize that God is the one that can see our heart. He can dig down deep, he can pull back the curtains, and he can see that. And really, what we have to realize is just because no one else can see our heart doesn't mean we don't go to work on it. You know, what's in your heart eventually does come out and manifest in action. In Proverbs chapter 27 and verse 19, it says, "As in water faith reflects faith, so a man's heart reveals the man." It says, as water kind of reflects the man's face, it says, the heart of man reveals the man. You know that what you think about, what's in your mind, it eventually comes out. Now really, when people are walking by us, they can't always see what's in our mind, they can't always see our thoughts, but eventually, you know what happens? Our heart manifests in action. And that can be seen, those actions. Isn't that what he's talking about in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 11? They're all worried about traditions and washing their hands and things of that nature. And in Matthew chapter 5, verse 11, he says, "Not what goes into the mouth defiles a man, but what comes out of the mouth defiles a man." Okay, you know, washing your hands, you know, you guys have kind of got lost in that tradition. It says, not what goes in, but what comes out. But he continues on in Matthew chapter 5 to explain this in verses 16 through 20. It says, "So Jesus said, are you also still without understanding? Do you not yet understand that whatever enters the mouth goes into the stomach and is eliminated? But those things which proceed out of the mouth come from the heart." God can see the heart. He can see it every moment of every day. And he could see David's heart. He could see the heart of the shepherd. And seeing that heart, he certainly makes a decision that is going to affect Israel in the future. He's seeing the heart of David. You understand that God can see your heart? The verse continues in Matthew chapter 5 there. It says, "But those things which proceed out of the mouth come from the heart, and they defile a man. For out of the heart proceeds evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornication, theft, false witness, blasphemy. And these are the things which defile a man." Everything comes from the heart. Everything comes from the mind. And God can see it every step of the way. Question, are you going to go to operation on your heart? Hard to go into operation on things that you can't always see, right? The doctor wants to see their target. They want to see what's going on. And really, you know who's in the best position to work on your heart? God, because he can see it. But number two, you. You know your heart more than anyone else. Will you go to work on it? In Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, it says, "Don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of our mind." Are you willing to go to work on your heart? Are you willing to go to work on it? Something that many times people won't see. See, a lot of times people focus on what people can see. We want to focus on this. We want to focus on this. We want to focus on this because that's what people see. But really, the major work that needs to be done is where people can't see. Have you went to work on your heart? Because God can see it. In Psalm 51 and verse 10, it says, "Create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a steadfast spirit within me." God can operate on our heart. He can operate on our heart, certainly through His Word, certainly through us being conformed to His Word. Are you willing to go to work on your heart? Are you focused internally as much as you are externally? Because many times in this world, it's very easy to focus on the external. Certainly, when Samuel shows up, that's what they're focused on. Everybody there is focused on the external, and God's the only one that's saying, "Hey, don't worry about the external so much. Maybe you should worry about the internal. I'm looking at the heart. You're looking at the appearance. You're looking at the stature. You're looking at all these outward things. Are you focused more outwardly, or are you focused inwardly? Because God can see the inward." In 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 3 through 4, it says, "Do not let your adornment be merely outwardly, arranging of the hair, wearing gold, or putting on fine apparel. Rather, let it be in the hidden person of the heart, with the incorruptible beauty of the gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God." It's very easy in this life to be focused about the outward. It's what everyone sees. It's what everybody's looking at, except for God. See, God can see the outward, but He can also see the inward. We go to work where God is looking. Our heart's so important. In Matthew chapter 5, verse 8, it says, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." Your heart's important. It's important to your life. It's important to the way you function. It's important to the way you conduct yourself as a Christian. And isn't that intimidating that God knows our heart? In Proverbs chapter 21 and verse 2, it says, "Every way of man is right in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the heart." Oh, isn't that powerful? There's everyone that goes out there thinks they're doing the right thing, but at the end of the day, you know who can weigh our motives, who can really dig down and see why we're doing what we're doing for the reasons that we're doing it? God can see it. Will you go work on your heart? Because every way of man is right in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the heart. You think you can hide it, but you can't hide it from God. In Psalm 44 and verse 21, it says, "Would not God search this out, for He knows the secrets of the heart?" Do we hide things that are wide open to God? The heart is a fundamental part of the Christian life. Certainly we're not talking about the blood pump, we're talking about our mind. That's what we're talking about. And in Matthew chapter 22 and verse 37, it says, "Jesus said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind." The heart is a part of the Christian life. You know that God can see it? I can't see it. The elders can't see it. Now we do understand that idea that those things that we hold in our heart eventually manifest in action, and we can see those actions. But really, at the end of the day, God can see your heart. God can see the heart of the shepherd on that day. You know something else that God can see that many times? I know that we can see this as well, but I don't think we can understand it quite the way that God understands it. If God saw the value of that shepherd. What does the Lord see? You know, many times we're very hard on ourselves. I can't get into your internal dialogue, but certainly I can tell you a little bit about mine. From time to time, it's not the brightest place. I think negative thinking and negative thoughts, they creep in very, very easily into our lives. Many times we might say something like, "I'm worthless. I'm useless. Can God really use me?" But you know what God saw in the shepherd? He saw value. God doesn't see worthless when He looks at us. God doesn't see useless when He looks at us. He sees something of value, does He not? And I think God understands His value more than anyone else. He looks at David, not only does He see, and He looks and He sees David's heart, but also He sees David's value. And when God looks at us, He sees the exact same thing. He sees in us what many times we don't see in ourselves. God values us. In Matthew chapter 10, verses 29 through 31, He says, "Are not two sparrows sold for a copper coin? And not one of them falls to the ground apart from your Father's will. But the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Do not fear, therefore, you are of more value than many sparrows." God values us. Even when we don't see it in ourselves, even when we're down on ourselves, even when we have every negative thought that goes through our mind, God says, "I see you and I see your value." And God understands that value very well. Can you even put a value on what the value that God puts on us? If you wanted to put a dollar amount on it, say, "How much does God value me? Not my family per se, but just me as an individual. How much does God value me?" Because the depth that He speaks to that value goes beyond words, It goes beyond number value. You know what it goes into? It goes into action. Because we know what God did for us. In Romans chapter 5 and verse 8, it says, but God demonstrated his own love towards us, and that while we are still sinners, Christ died for us. The value that God puts on us is not a number value. It's an action value. It's a life value. A value that we couldn't put numbers on even if we tried. God sees value many times and we don't see value. In 1 John chapter 4, verses 9 and 10, it says, and this the love of God was manifest towards us, that God has sent his only begotten Son into the world that we might live through him. And this is love. Not that we love God, but that he loved us and sent his Son to be the propitiation for our sins. What's that word, propitiation? It's appeasement. To pay our penalty. He saw the value. He said, you're worth to be bought back. You're worth to be redeemed. You're worth dying for. A value beyond numbers. A value that sometimes we don't assign to ourselves, but God puts that value on us every time. God put it on the shepherd, the future king of Israel. He puts it on you as well. God values every single individual. What was the price? It was Jesus Christ. We think of 1 Peter chapter 18 and 19, chapter 1. It says, knowing that we were not redeemed with corruptible things like silver or gold from your aimless conduct received by tradition from your fathers, but with the precious blood of Christ. You weren't bought back with gold and silver. No, that wasn't the price. God did not say, I'm going to redeem you. What's the money of value? 1,000, 10,000, 1,000,000. No, that's not the check that was written. The check was signed in blood. A value without number. And certainly that's what the Bible tells us. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 19 through 20. The Bible tells us you were bought with a price. You were bought with a price. And what a high price that was. I don't know what your internal dialogue was. I don't know what your internal dialogue is. But I just know it's not too hard for Satan to get into your mind and start picking at your mind and go, you know what? You're worthless. You know what? You're useless. You know what? You're insignificant. Not when it comes to Jesus. He sees the value of each and every one. A value above any number we could ever put. When we say we're worthless, God says you're priceless. When we say we're useless, God says I can use you in my kingdom. When we say we're insignificant, God says you're worth it all. You know, when God was there in the situation, Samuel is looking at the outward, and the family is looking at the outward, but God, on that day, I think not only does he see, and he looks, and he sees in relation to David, he sees these things, he sees his heart, but also, we start to realize that he sees David's value. How does God see you? Let's go to our last point this evening. God sees our potential. I tell you, personally for me, this is probably one of the more scary things that God sees. I mean, God sees my heart. I mean, is that not intimidating enough? He sees my heart, he sees my motives, he sees my mind. That's pretty intimidating. God sees my value. Even though when perhaps we get lost in negative self-talk, God says, I died for you. I died for you. You have value. You have been redeemed. You're priceless. But then we get to the third, which is, didn't God see David's potential? I think many times we look at our lives, and we look at our spiritual lives like this, like a closed book. Sometimes we go, you know what, I've achieved everything I can achieve spiritually. And maybe that's not the exact dialogue, but that's almost the way we act sometimes. Is, you know what, God has used me to my max capacity. And you know what God says? There's another chapter to the book. We try to close the book and say, no, God, I've served, I've done all that I can do. I've maxed out my potential. Let me just close the book. This is it for me.
And God says, no, 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 there's another chapter. There's another chapter of that book. You know, I wonder about David many times. What an extraordinary event. As he's out in the field with the sheep,
They've already went through all the brothers, and then God says, no, there's somebody else. And Samuelite goes, is there somebody else? And God says, yeah, there's somebody else. And they said, go get him. And they bring him here, and he gets anointed as the next king of Israel. You think David saw his potential in that moment while he was keeping his sheep? I think one of the intimidating things when I think about God and what he sees, certainly he can see my heart. That's intimidating. Certainly he can see my value, and I'm so thankful for that. But he can see my potential. And he can see yours too. You understand that you're God's people? In 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 9 and 10, it says, but you're a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, his own special people, that you may proclaim the praises of him who called you out of darkness into marvelous light, who once were not a people, but are now the people of God, who have not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy. You understand that you're God's people? You understand that God can see your potential. I understand we're all different. But you know what? God seeing my potential keeps me awake from time to time. I don't know what God has in store for me. If I listened to the little voice in my head, I would have stopped a long, long time ago. But you know what? I started listening to God and said, you know what, pal? You can do a little bit more. You can be a little bit better. You can try to serve a little bit more. You understand that you're God's tool. You're his workmanship. Without you, God is kind of short-handed. He needs us. We are his hands, his eyes, his ears, those types of things to help God, to help the church, to help the bride of Christ. In Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 10, it says, for we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. Who's God's workmanship? Christians, it's you and I. And God can see our potential in working for the kingdom. I think we're so quick to cut ourselves short. And maybe we're surprised by this, but the more I study my Bible, the less surprised I am by it, that brothers and sisters in Christ, we cut ourselves far too short. Just look at any leader of the Bible. Look at Gideon. Look at Moses. Moses says, I can't go. I can't be the one to go back. You got to find somebody else. And he comes up with every excuse in the book. But that's the thing about God, is God sees our potential. He saw the potential of Moses. He saw the potential of Joshua. He saw the potential of all the reluctant leaders of the Bible. And I think it's a common trend. I don't think it's the exception. I think it's the rule. I think we cut ourselves short. Men and women alike, in service to God's kingdom, we cut it short many times. And something that keeps me up from time to time is, what is my potential in the service to the Lord? We cut ourselves short. We see it common with the leaders of the Bible. They say, I can't do that, I can't do that, I can't do that. And then they find themselves doing it. And you look back and you really get astounded from time to time. I could be wrong, but I believe it was Thomas Edison. And I believe he said, if we accomplish our potential, we would surprise ourselves. And I might be a little off on that quotation. If we accomplished our potential, we would astound ourselves or surprise ourselves. I've surprised myself many times. And it's less about me, but it's more about God. It's about how God comes into your life. He starts working on your mind. He starts working on you as his servant. And over the course of time, you keep growing. You keep developing. Your faith keeps growing. You keep learning. You keep trying to serve God better and better each and every day. And then you find yourself in a place that you don't recognize. I've said it many times, but I was in a pew. I believe it's Terry Jones. He was preaching and said, who knows where God will take you? You might be a preacher someday. I looked over at my dad and I laughed. That's the truth. I've surprised myself many times. I attribute that more to God than I do myself. Because I think of God, and I think about what God sees. God can see my heart, he can see my value, and God can see my potential. Are you considering that God saw the potential of David when he was in the field keeping the sheep? Have you thought about that? God is taking you all this way. You don't think he's going to take you all the way? God's looking at your potential. You know, you can improve. Isn't that a Bible idea? Isn't that what's told to the young preacher Timothy? 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 17 says, meditate on these things. Give yourself entirely to them, and your progress may be evident to all. Wait, this idea of progress, this idea of growing, this idea of continuing on. He says, Timothy, people will be able to see this progress. People will be able to see you grow. Are people seeing us grow? You know, the Christian life takes some endurance and perseverance. And certainly when you look at David, he's got a long road ahead of him, doesn't he? He's got a long road. We're going to see him go against Goliath. But that's not going to be the end. He's going to come into the king's house, and you know what? He's going to be kicked out of the king's house, and he's going to be running all over the place. He is going to go through a lot of heartache. He's going to go through a lot of hardship. He's going to go through a lot of adversity. And here, as he's this shepherd in the field, almost overlooked, God says, you know what? He's got potential. Potential to be what? The king of Israel. There's certainly some endurance and perseverance in the Christian life. We're going to fall short. But I want you to understand that falling short does not necessarily disqualify us. Certainly we need to learn from those things. We need to repent of those things. But certainly we have all fallen short. And if that disqualifies us, we're all disqualified. In Proverbs chapter 24 and verse 16, it's speaking there, and certainly there's the idea of the person that is unrighteous, the person getting trapped by sin. But what it says about the righteous person is interesting. Proverbs chapter 24 and verse 16, it says, a righteous man may fall seven times and rise again. The Christian life is about perseverance. The Christian life is about endurance. We're not going to be perfect. But one of those things that I think about and consider from time to time is potential. You know, I think about Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5, and there's a lot of stuff in the Sermon on the Mount, but certainly you get to that idea of you're the light of the world, a city set on a hill that cannot be hidden, you know, a lamp not hidden under the lampstand. And I think about that a lot. I think about my example, and certainly I'm not perfect, and I try to do the best I can. But I ran across a quote one time, and it just really stuck with me. And the quote meant something to this effect. Says you never know who your example is encouraging. You never know who your example is encouraging. You never know who's following your life. You might think nobody's watching. You might think nobody's paying attention. You might think you are just that shepherd boy and nobody is watching you. But God knows your potential. Not only does He know that, but He knows that your light is powerful and touching the people that are around you. You never know who's watching your example and who's just encouraging. So I encourage you, when you think about what the Lord sees in relation to potential, don't close your book quite yet. It's not time to be closed. Maybe God's got a whole other chapter and He's just waiting to take you there. You know, we think about this idea, what does the Lord see? What did He see in David? I think He saw David's heart. I think He saw his value. And I think He saw its potential. And when I think of those things, those are powerful. Because many times, these are the things that we don't acknowledge ourselves. Sometimes we try to hide things away in our hearts, God sees. Many times we don't think we have value, God says we do. Many times we try to run away from our potential and what we could accomplish for God, and God says, I can see it. What does the Lord see in your life? There's some things I know He sees. I know He can see your heart. I know He can see your value. And I know He can see your potential. And when I think of those things can keep me going. As the Lord watches over me, as the Lord watches over us, as we strive to be the best Christians we can be in His service, certainly He's going to take us some places that might surprise ourselves along the way. Now, in some respects, that might connect to becoming a Christian. There are many people that have perhaps become Christians. They think of their past. They think of the things that they've done in their past. And, you know, you think of Saul Paul. You don't think that Paul sat down in his life and think, how in the world did I get here? How in the world am I a preacher of the gospel? When I was killing people of the way, when I was tearing families apart, how in the world did I get here? It's because when we follow God, He can lead us places that we didn't intend on going. And why is that? Because of what the Lord sees. You know what? You might be not understanding all the questions of life. But certainly, God sees some things in you. He sees enough that he sent his son to die for you so that you could become a New Testament Christian. Perhaps you need to become a New Testament Christian, or perhaps you need to pray for the church. We ask you to please come at this time as we stand and as we sing.